If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at CaliforniaPsychics.com.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again! It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 240. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. It helps us out a ton when you guys do that. So leave a comment as well. Just support the fellas. Find us on YouTube on WEEI's YouTube channel. You can find the Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all of our videos and don't forget to subscribe to WEEI to get all their content. And find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Here with Sammy, here with Pat, first post All-Star Break podcast. And there was a little bit of panic in the fan base after the first two games. I wouldn't say any of us, the group chat certainly, it was obviously frustration, not panic. Like there's a difference between the two, but I don't think any of us were super nervous or panicked or anything, but it was a big third game going into a crochet start to salvage a non-sweep. You don't want to get swept and have to get on a flight to Philadelphia and have Zach Wheeler versus Walker Buehler be your first game coming off of a sweep when the narrative surrounding your team for the last half decade is that you can't play in the second half. So, yeah, two games, you score one run. You don't score for the first, what, six innings or was it five innings?
Six, because when Crochet came out, they scored.
Okay, so through the first six innings, you did not score. That said, important to note that it was 2.5 games. 2.5 games. And I know the Red Sox have not been a good second half team the last few years. This team is different than that than those two teams, whether you like it or not. Obviously, there's constants. There's players that were here last year. There's players that were here the year before. The manager's the same. I get it. The GM's, the front office is mostly the same. I get it. But I would say the main reason, although they did not hit for a lot of the second half last year, but the main reason they fell apart last year, and certainly the reason they fell apart the year before, is because they didn't have enough pitching in the rotation, and then their guys in the bullpen fell apart. In large part because they didn't have enough pitching going deep in the rotation. You don't have that this year, but to start this thing off, I just think it was so important to get that win, not get swept in Chicago, and not risk Buehler versus Wheeler tomorrow to lose 4 straight. I think it's important just for the vibes, if anything, for the fan base, just to get that win today. And shout out to Willie, shout out to Crochet, shout out to Breggy. Like, these guys got the job done today, and this podcast is going to be a lot different coming off a win than it would have been coming off a loss.
Absolutely, yeah. Salvage some vibes. That's a good way to go for the Red Sox. I think this series versus the Cubs, looking back on it, not how I felt as it was happening, but looking back on it, it kind of went as expected. You know, that first game, you have Giolito, who's been really good lately, but, you know, after the break, he's been off for a weird amount of time, versus Colin Ray, who's also been very good lately. I kind of didn't realize how good that guy's been for the Cubs up to this point. Mm-hmm. So that one's kind of a toss up. The Cubs are, they're a better team than the Red Sox. I hate to say it. They just are. They're really good. One of the best teams, if not the best teams in baseball, along with the Dodgers and those teams. So that one's kind of a toss up, lean towards the Cubs. Cubs win that one. Game two, Imanaga versus Bayo. Good luck with Imanaga at home. That's just a tough assignment. Cubs win that game. And then the third game, Garrett Crochet versus kind of sort of a game that was supposed to be a bullpen game and then wasn't. But regardless, big advantage for the Red Sox with that matchup. They win that game. So not much has changed for me as far as my outlook on this team in this first series of the second half. It's a bit of a mouthful. I would say the biggest concern for me, I didn't think Giolito looked very good. I thought he got really lucky. He was really, really lucky that the wind was howling in from center field. There were, not an exaggeration, three or four instances where the Cubs hit a ball that might have been a home run on any other day. So, you know, his numbers were fine, but just didn't exude confidence to me. And then Bayo, fine, not his best. And then Crochet, again, also not his best, but still pretty dominant. So, yeah, weird series, frustrating series, but overall, I feel like we're kind of in the same spot with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the starts out of the break for Giolito and Bayo just further exemplifies how badly they need a number two starter. I think a lot of people are putting way, way, way too much faith in those, whatever it was, 6-week stretches for the both of them to just kind of not ignore the number two, but be like, oh, maybe Charlie Morton will be good. Like, you're not in that boat anymore. And we've been saying it, like, we weren't, you know, we were buying in, obviously, they were pitching great, but we weren't saying, like, oh, the rotation's fine, like, you need to worry about anything. Not the case. It wasn't the case. Still isn't the case. But, yeah, you needed today. You needed to take Sunday's game. Crochet was not sharp, but it kept him in the game, kept things tight. Offense finally woke up a little bit. Bats went going. Roman had a great game. Bregman with a huge pinch hit bomb. Willier, two bombs. It was, you needed today, and you got to take two out of three in Philly. And I'm telling you right now, it will not be the Wheeler versus Buehler start.
Yeah.
Well, come on.
I want to talk pitching a little bit. You guys beat me to it, which I'm glad about, because the Sox went with their three best guys in the series, not in order, but they went with Giolito, Bayo, and Buehler. I liked what I saw from Bayo. Obviously, the first inning was the first inning, and it was rough. In the second inning, he let in the run, but I thought he settled down, and the fact that he was able to do that, which has been an issue for him, get through six innings, which has been an issue for him, not recently, but like earlier in this year, remember, there was a long stretch of starts where he wasn't even getting through five. And the fact that he could start off a game like that against an offense like the Cubs, which has been one of the best in the game, to settle in that way and to get a quality start out of it, I thought was impressive. Crochet, again, yeah, you said it, not his sharpest, but when not your sharpest is allowing one run, he works through it, through his jams, works through guys on base, Picor Armstrong on base to lead off an inning. It doesn't matter. I thought he looked good. Giolito was the only one where I was a little bit, okay, like not his best. You know, the velocity was down a couple of ticks. The changeup, he was letting it loose, he was losing his grip on it, and it was going up a little bit, which hurt him and could have hurt him worse. The thing is, though, with these three guys, wherever the Red Sox go, like they will not go anywhere if one or two of those guys, like if Bayo and Giolito aren't good. Like, I don't care if they get Joe Ryan at the deadline. If Bayo and Giolito fall off the map, it's the same thing as last year. They could have got the best pitcher in the game, but if we had these conversations. If Houck and Cutter fall off the wagon, like it's not going to matter. So, you can get whoever you want at the deadline. You're going to need Bayo and Giolito to make it to the postseason. So those guys being at their sharpest is going to be something that, you know, every single podcast we're going to talk about, because if those guys can put together quality starts every single time, I like to think, and hopefully after the deadline, the offense is even stronger. But I like to think that with quality starts, this offense should be able to win you games more often than not.
Yeah, agreed. And on those two guys, Giolito and Bayo, starting with Giolito, his velocity was down to start the game, but it ticked up as he went on. He was throwing 95, 96 later on in his outing. So I don't know what that is. Like, it's weird because on one hand, you can look at it and say he had all this extra rest due to the break. Why is he not fresh as a daisy and zipping it 96 right out the gate? But on the other hand, you could say, oh, he was a little bit rusty. He needed a few innings to get up to speed. I don't know. There's something weird about this Red Sox organization right after the All-Star break. They just don't play their best. Luckily, today, as we record on Sunday, Alex Bregman and Willier Abreu were like, no, we are not doing that. But on Giolito, weird outing, not his best outing. You're right, Gordo. He didn't have the grip on the changeup. I think that was him not getting on top of the ball. When he has failed this year, it's been when he does not get on top of the ball, which sounds insane because he's 6'6". How do you get on top? Like, but he does. And that's when he's at his best. The skeleton machine that the Red Sox have showed him that, showed him when you are good, you are on top of the ball, you are using your height to your advantage, leverage. And I thought he did that a little bit in the latter half of that outing, but still not super impressive from him. Good enough, though the team didn't win. As far as Bayo goes, a few episodes ago, you guys asked me what I need to see from Bayo to kind of buy into this uptick in production. And I said, I need to see him struggle and then bounce back, because that's been the issue with him. When he struggles, it snowballs. So in that game on Saturday, awful first inning, and then he bounced back and pitched a pretty good game in the end. So not exactly what I was talking about when I said I need to see him struggle. I was more talking about have a full, you know, not so good outing, and then you have to have a good one afterwards. But this is like a smaller version of what I was talking about. He bounced back after a nightmare first inning, and he kept the Red Sox in the game for as long as he could. Now, again, not his best outing either, and then the bullpen kind of fell apart, so that was a moot point. But that's a, I guess you could say that's another step in the right direction for Brian Bayo, despite the result.
So before, because I want to talk a lot of trade deadline on this pod. That's what the people want to talk about. That's what we're going to talk about. That's what they want to hear about. Before we get there, though, I do want to ask you guys, and this would have been, I think, a tougher question had they been following a loss and got swept. But how much do you guys buy into the whole second half woes thing? Like, this is a pattern for the team. I was texting with my buddy. I'll try to scroll up, because I sent him the records for each of the last, I think, five seasons in the second half. And I'll get it eventually. But how much do you buy into the whole second half struggle? And is that something that you're paying attention to with this team? Or do you think it's just a different team, different players, different pitching staff, and it's going to be different?
I buy in that it's a thing. The Red Sox do struggle in the beginning of the second half. But you just mentioned it. You have Garrett Crochet, who on Sunday did exactly what you needed him to, and Alex Bregman, who also on Sunday did exactly what you needed him to. So it is still a thing. I do think they have some sort of issue when it comes to starting the second half, whether that's a preparation thing or too relaxed or not enough relaxation. I don't know. We're not in that clubhouse, but there is something going on there. But I think that the new guys you added, and I could throw Chapman in there too, because like we said, the bullpen was an issue last year. The new guys on the roster really alleviate some of that stress that I have as a fan of the Red Sox.
Okay, Pat, I want to get your take, but I'll give you the records first. So right now, obviously, 2025, they're 1-2. 2024, they were 28-38 in the second half. 2023, they were 30-41 in the second half. 2022, they were 30-39 in the second half. 2021, they were 37-34 in the second half. That was after going 55-36 in the first half. And in 2019, they were, I think I have that one wrong. I said 35-27, but that feels wrong. I think they were under 500. But either way, they were over 500 in the first half every single one of those years, and under 500. I'm going to get you 2019 right now. 2019 in the second half, they were 35-37. So it was, 35-37. So under 500. So each of the last 6 years, they were over 500 in the first half. And if you include this year, in which they are under 500 in the second half right now, that's now 5 of the last 6 years where they're under. So, Pat, how much do you buy into that as a thing? Is it something you think about? And if it is something that you think about, do you think that it does apply to this year's team, or is it just because you're scarred from previous years?
No, I mean, it's definitely applicable, right? Because it's not a whole new 26-man roster. A lot of this, 90% of the roster is the same outside of, you know, like the relievers and then Chapman, Crochet, Bregman, all that stuff. But a lot of it in the years past, especially the last 2 years, it's been like guys who had a really solid or like great first half fizzle out. Like last year, it was Hauk. Duran had a kind of rough second half. Like we had been talking about for years, they need guys who can continue and build off the first half, not fizzle out, not die out, not struggle in the second half. So it'll be for sure interesting to see the guys who have been on these teams in the years prior. Is it a culture shift? Does, you know, bringing in Bregman and Crochet and Chapman and these guys, is that enough to maybe get you over the hump a little bit? I don't know. I think that's hard to tell. We'll see, obviously. But to say that it's not applicable or just not subscribed to it, I think it's kind of overlooking it, because it's something where it's not 1 or 2 years. We're going 6 years in a row that they have been a really bad second half team.
Yeah. For me, I feel like you have to pay attention to it only because it's just all we've known for the last several years. Like, this is just what it's been for us. So I'm sorry, because I feel like this team doesn't deserve that kind of, like, they just won 10 straight and they deserve some leash to lose a couple of games against a really good team and not have everyone saying, hey, this team is just going to do what all these other teams did. Because yeah, like, they've got starters that go deeper into games than they've had in the past. They have more starting pitchers than they've had in the past. They have a much deeper bullpen than they've had in the past. And that bullpen isn't being used as much because the starters are going deep. So yeah, it's different. Last year, obviously, the offense was a big part of their fall off as well. And like, we'll see what happens with the offense this year. I'm not going to just go ahead and assume that they're going to be great when, you know, for long stretches this year, they haven't been. But the pitching, I feel much better about. And I don't think this group deserves it. But with the fans, like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just, imagine if you're a 15-year-old Red Sox fan, most of what you can remember is your team being really good in the first half and really bad in the second half. So this is just, it's gonna come with the territory here of just playing for the Red Sox until they show you once or twice that it's not who they are. It's the same thing as like day game Bayo. Like, Bayo was perfectly fine during the day last year, but up until this year, the day game Bayo narrative followed him. Like, even this year, he was starting games in the day and people were saying daytime Bayo, even though that hadn't been a thing for multiple years. But now that it's been a couple of years, he's been fine in the day. I feel like I don't hear it as much. It's gonna be the same thing with the team in the second half. They just gotta play better ball, and yeah, they're just gonna have to go 5-4 in the stretch, 4-5 in this 9-game stretch, and take it from there at the deadline. But
it's pretty simple, Gordo. I mean, you just they quite simply have to play better than they have the last few years. It's so simple. You can't have mental errors like what Toro did the other day. You can't have starters going 5 innings. You can't do that. No team can survive like that. So not to oversimplify a very complicated sport that we're discussing here, but it is really that simple. Just don't make the dumb errors. Go deep into games. Blah, 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 blah. Win.
I like it, Sammy. Keep it simple. Let's get to the deadline. This is what we're here for. I'm going to ask you guys a question to open this up. And I've not prepared Sammy or Pat for the question. So take a second to think about it, but not too long. You've got $10 to spend. I would say there are four needs that people talk about with this Red Sox team. There is starting pitching, there is first base, there is bullpen, and there is backup catcher. You have $10 to spend. Allocate those $10. The more money you spend on a spot, the better player you get for that spot. You don't have to allocate it to every spot. You could say $10 on starting pitcher and you can get yourself Joe Ryan. But allocate the $10 across those four spots with how much you want the Red Sox to press to add to those spots.
Okay. That's really hard, because if you tell me I can just get Joe Ryan, I gotta do it. I gotta say, like, look, I think.
Okay. Let's take Joe Ryan out of the equation. You're right. Cause if you can get Joe Ryan, you're right. $10 to Joe Ryan and nothing else.
I like that more. So non Joe Ryan, non Mackenzie Gore, non like,
let's talk rentals. Like, let's say they're going for rentals. If they're going for rentals.
So I would spend probably 4 on pitcher. No. Hold on. Let me think. Okay. Can I give you a name I want? I want to know how much this guy costs in this hypothetical. Can I do that?
Okay. Yeah.
How much does Ryan O'Hearn cost? Because that's the bat I badly, badly want.
4?
Okay. 4 on Ryan O'Hearn. 5 on the starting pitcher, and then just get me a depth reliever.
So 1 on the reliever, and you don't touch catcher?
No. I don't think there's any like meaningful upgrade you can make in the middle of the season at catcher that's going to make you that much better. I'm still not precluding Connor Wong from figuring something out. Like, he's been completely useless, and we've seen him for 2 years be at least capable. And he's not getting regular playing time. He hurt his wrist earlier. Like, I'm not saying he's playing well. Like, give this guy. I just think he could be at least like somewhat useful in some sort of way where he's not like a complete black hole in the lineup. And even if he's not, I don't think Christian Vasquez, love the guy. One of my irrationally favorite Red Sox, but nah, come on. So I'm getting I'm getting a like Ryan O'Hearn for my bet. I'm getting a solid starter. Like end of the spectrum would be Merrill Kelly. And I guess at the bottom, it would be like Adrian Hauser, someone who bridges the gap and helps you make the playoffs. And then I'd add one depth relief option just in case someone gets hurt. Because I'm starting to shift thinking that the offense is more important than the bullpen. Previously, I had said the bullpen more important than the offense to add to, kind of sort of coming back towards the offense.
Sammy, you basically took the words out of my mouth with how you allocated your money. I've been dabbling. Like, I think, yeah, I want to go $5 to the starting pitcher. And then what I'm dabbling with is, do I go $4 to the hitter and $1 to the bullpen, or just go 5 and 5? Because like, I would love for them to add Merrill Kelly. If we're talking rentals, he's the best rental starter I think that they can get. Maybe Seth Lugo. I don't like, they're kind of in the same realm. Like there's not some obvious, no doubt stud rental. Like Zach Allen's obviously the biggest name, but he's got a 5.5 ERA. And just when you thought he was turning it around, bang, poop his pants. So I dabble with, cause Sammy, in a perfect world, yes, I'd add a depth reliever, but I just, every time, like for instance, they attended the David Robertson workout. Craig Breslow was at the David Robert, or was reportedly at the David Robertson workout. And it's like, if they signed David Robertson, is he better than anyone in their, like, can we be confident that he's better than anyone in the bullpen right now? I don't know that we can be.
Like, you can be moderately confident, but not, it's not a slam dunk.
So it's like, so if I'm adding a reliever, I have to have a no doubt this is who I'm optioning. And if someone gets hurt, then it changes my answer. If someone goes down, or like, let's say like Weiser allows runs in 3 out of his next 4 outings, and it's clear he just needs to like take a month off like he did last year, that's different. But right now there's no one that I'm sitting here saying that they should option. And that's with the understanding that every contending team should add to the bullpen. But I just don't know who I want to option. It's like you can trade for a reliever with options and send that guy down, because then he's probably not worth trading for. So it's a tough answer. I want to get into the bat and talk about your Ryan O'Hearn thing, Sammy, but I want to get Pat's money allocation. When I said that I pretty much aligned with what you said, Sammy, Pat's eyes perked up. So I want to hear if he thinks a little bit differently here. Are you going to allocate more to the starter?
I am. I'm going to go 5 to the starter, 2 to the bat, 2 to the bullpen, 1 to the catcher.
Oh. Oh, I'm not going to look. Just tell me. It's my raw reaction.
I just talked about David Robertson. Breaking news: the Philadelphia Phillies are in agreement with David Robertson. So you're going to maybe be facing him in the next series. We'll see.
Okay, he's off the list. There we go.
So no more David Robertson talk. Pat, continue your thought.
So 5 to the starter, 2 to the pen, 2 to the bat, 1 to the catcher.
Pat's going all over the board.
I am. I'm spreading the wealth. $5 for a starter. I'm trying to think of like what I would say. That's probably like Zach Gallen-ish, right?
I think there's a tier. Like, Pat, who's in a higher tier for you? Because that's another thing we should talk about, is that the Red Sox sent scouts to watch Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly. Who's the better starting pitching option? They're both rentals. Who's the better for you?
For this year, I think it's Merrill Kelly.
I agree with that.
I think he's just been so good. And then, like, there's obviously way higher upside with Zach Gallen. But you
definitely not a lot of time to tap into it, though. People are like, oh, put him in the lab. It's like, you have 2 months.
Yeah. So I would say Merrill Kelly. So I think Merrill Kelly would be like $6-7. I think Zach Gallen's $5. So we'll say Zach Gallen. $2 for a reliever is like a leverage guy, not like a premier setup or closer, but like a Dennis Santana.
Dennis Santana.
Oh,
I know, right?
I ran into him at a Costco once.
So Dennis Santana would be like a 6th or 7th inning guy, like not one of, not Hicks, Chapman, Whitlock, but Slayton, but before that with Alcala.
Yeah. So I would say Gallen, Dennis Santana, $2 for the bat. So obviously, you know, you're not getting Ryan O'Hearn, but like Carlos Santana.
Yeah, is he a $2 bat? Yeah, he might be. He might be. Oh, he might be a $3 bat. It's all dependent. I don't know. It's your own.
And then a dollar on the backup catcher. You know what?
That's Christian Vasquez.
It's Christian Vasquez. You know another guy who I'm kind of intrigued by because we would just take on the money? Kyle Higashioka.
How much does he make?
He signed through next year. I believe he makes like $7.5 million.
That's an interesting one.
How's he doing this year? Ooh, he is 8th percentile blocking, 1st percentile caught stealing.
Is he really?
Okay, holy. Can I give my pitch for Connor Wong?
Yikes. Yeah.
I'll give my pitch for Connor Wong, and I echo everything that Sammy said. Sammy, you talked about he should shave. He should get rid of the beard.
No, dude, He looks good with the beard.
He doesn't have any extra base hits with the beard. It's time for it to go. But you're right, Sammy. He's been a capable bat in the past. He's playing not the defense that he was in the first, maybe half of the first half. It's come down a little bit. But he is a perfectly capable defender, and he's caught Brian Bayo's run of his stretch of quality starts that he's been on. It's basically been Connor Wong catching all of those. So if you're going to upgrade your backup catcher, you're going to have to understand that Brian Bayo is going to be getting along with a new catcher. And granted, he was a Reese McGuire exclusive guy before, so it's not something he like can't do. But it's if you're going to go from Connor Wong to Christian Vasquez, are you really upgrading enough to take Bayo's personal catcher away from him? Like, Connor's got to hit more than this. Like, he gets up in every – anytime he plays, he gets up in a big spot. It doesn't come through.
Do you guys know his OPS? You want to guess his OPS right now? It looks like a batting average.
I know it's
dude, it's like 397.
I think it's lower.
372.
That's crazy. But I stand by it. I wouldn't go for a backup catcher unless it's like – if like you're getting like a Sean Murphy type where it's like, okay, we're going to have co-catchers here. That's a different story, but I'm not getting some backup catcher to just exchange with Wong. Like
it's not enough. It doesn't do enough. And I know, and I don't want people to think we're defending Connor Wong here, he's been awful, but at least he gives you solid defense. And he's friends with Bayo. can I throw a pitcher out there for you guys? This guy's not getting any love market. Adrian Hauser. He's a guy who had some success with the Brewers. It's not the sexiest name ever, but he's been great this year with the White Sox. They picked him up off the scrap heap. He has a 1.89 ERA in 10 starts. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys, only 44 and 62 innings, but he's a ground ball machine. And with this new Red Sox infield defense with Meyer, Bregman, Story, I feel great about a ground ball pitcher on the Red Sox. So, I mean, that guy's he should at least be considered.
That's where I would be with him, just because there's not very many good starting pitcher options out there. Like if you lose out on Merrill Kelly, Zach Gallen, like Sandy Alcantara is not going to get dealt, and nor should the Red Sox be going for Sandy Alcantara right now in the middle of the season. Like these, let's take out the controllable guys. Like there's just not very many rental starters out there, and every team that's in the race wants one. Hauser is not he's got a 1.89 ERA. He's not a guy that's going to keep that up. But what you have? Yes. But the question is he going to be good enough to start a playoff game for you? Like, would you feel fine with him on the mound in a playoff series? And it's tough because with the stats right now, of course, the answer is yes. But you just got to ask yourself, what's he going to be the rest of the way? I think like he'd be on my list. He wouldn't be at the top.
The problem with that is if you're only looking at rentals, there's really only one rental I'd feel pretty confident about starting a playoff game, and that's Merrill Kelly. Otherwise, it's just you got to look at guys who can bridge the gap and get you to the playoffs. And I guess Seth Lugo, if you want to count him as a rental, I know he has the poison pill. I'd feel good about him too. But
But here's the issue: is both those teams you can put the Royals and the Diamondbacks in the same boat. If they win 5 out of their next 6, like yeah, those teams are buying. The Diamondbacks could uproot this trade deadline and throw it into a different stratosphere if they decide they're going to buy.
And then the bottom of the barrel before we move on to first base would be Heaney and Savali, who neither are really. Savali's had some success. Yeah.
Because like neither of those guys you're you want to start in a playoff game.
Well, Morton, but too. Actually, there you go. I was crapping all over the Charlie Morton idea the other day. That's a guy in a playoff game. I'd be like, okay, this guy's done this a million times before. I don't feel great about it, but who knows? We'll feel terrible.
Yeah, Morton had that bad start coming out of the break, but I actually agree with you, Sammy. Like, when that name first surfaced, it was Ken Rosenthal over the break. He surfaced the name Charlie Morton as someone. And when he speaks, you should listen. Like, clearly the Red Sox are looking into Charlie Morton. He had like a 10 ERA in April and leading into the first few days of May. They yanked him from the rotation. And then I got to pull up the Charlie Morton stats because they've come down because he let up 7 earned in his first start off the IL. Or sorry, out of the All-Star break. But
five
it's still
and
like
a half ERA.
But what is, I'm going to find it here. Someone start talking about Charlie Morton. Tell me what you think of Charlie Morton.
Charlie Morton in a few months will be twice as old as Roman Anthony.
Okay,
literally,
you ready?
Twice as old.
Yeah, that's crazy. So Charlie Morton starting on May 10th, which includes a few relief outings. Let's see what we got here. He in his last 12 games, he has a 3.47 ERA, 3.30 FIP, and that includes a 7 earned run start coming right out of the break. If you get rid of that 7 earned run start, it was a 2.61 ERA, 2.8 FIP. When Ken Rosenthal dropped that report, that's what we were dealing with. 11 outings, 8 of which were starts, 2.61 ERA, 2.8 FIP. So that's a guy who's like, it's kind of the Luis Garcia? The pitcher
Angels
from
guy
year?
From last
yeah.
year?
Yeah.
Luis Garcia.
He kind of the Luis Garcia of starting pitchers. Like, he's hot, he's old, he's been fine before.
All right, try it again. He's pitching well, he's been in the league for a long time, and he's had success in the past.
Oh, that was good. He's hot. He's old.
He's hot.
Bang.
He's old.
Bang.
He's hot. He's old. He's perfect. And he has a private jet.
Bang.
God damn.
All right. Yeah. Hot
so
old
yeah,
man.
So yeah, Charlie Morton, I would put right in the thick of the middle if you're going rentals only. And before people get mad at me for saying middle and not bottom, I'm telling you, there's just not that much out there.
Yeah. The bottom is Heen Machine and Savali. All right, first baseman. Maybe there's some hot old first baseman.
Yeah, I feel like for this is going to be a good discussion because Sammy, you've been tooting the Ryan O'Hearn horn in our chats for the last. Pat, get that fucking look off your face.
I didn't do anything.
You had your fucking look off your tooting. You've been tooting the Ryan O'Hearn horn.
Like toot 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 toot. It's Ryan O'Hearn. O'Hearn.
He's been fucking honking Ryan O'Hearn's titties for fucking 4 days in the group chats
wow,
now.
Whoa.
All right. Can I give my speech on why I like Ryan O'Hearn?
The floor is yours, Sammy. Why do you like Ryan O'Hearn?
Well, first of all, I think it's a really elegant fit. It's very simple, the way he would fit in with the Red Sox roster. But before I get to that, he is a rental. He's only making $8 million. In 2025, so that's not an issue. He's not a commitment, not a lot of money. I don't think his price is going to be too crazy. I think you can maybe get him for just a bunch of Rule 5 guys, like if you did Blaze Jordan and Paez, and I don't have the other guys off the top of my head, but guys like that, some of your mid to lower tier prospects, maybe, unless there's a big bidding war. I don't know. We'll see what the market is like, but point remains, he's not going to be crazy expensive. And if you have Ryan O'Hearn on the Red Sox, he plays first base against right-handed pitchers. Romy plays first base against left-handed pitchers. That is like having an all-star first baseman every single night. Because Ryan O'Hearn against lefties, against righties, 877 OPS. And then Romy Gonzalez versus lefties, this is a real stat, 1,153 OPS. You got one of those guys in the lineup every night at first base, regardless of who's pitching. You're always going to get production out of that spot. It's a lot like how the 2018 Red Sox had Mitch Moreland and Steve Pierce. If there's a righty pitching, Mitch Moreland plays. If there's a lefty pitching, Steve Pierce plays. So I think the fit is perfect. On top of that, he's a very good defensive first baseman, a little cherry on top for you there. And I think that's the most simple upgrade the Red Sox could make offensively. He's not as good overall as Josh Naylor. That's the other option, but he's going to cost less. And I think if you're the Red Sox in this season, you're looking at Ryan O'Hearn and saying that is more than enough to put our offense in that kind of playoff team caliber conversation. So that's my guy offensively right now, Orioles first baseman Ryan O'Hearn.
So let me ask you a question before I give my counter take on this. And I'm not against Ryan O'Hearn. He's just not my number one. If you platoon O'Hearn and Romy at first base, which would be an awesome, awesome first base platoon, who is your platoon partner with Marcelo at second, or are you just, he's playing against lefties as well?
I think I'm just letting Marcelo play against everyone. At least you get good defense with him. You get good defense, let him get in a groove. I think him playing against lefties, this is kind of weird. This worked with Duran. Duran playing against lefties helped him hit against righties because he got in a groove and he wasn't just in the lineup, out of the lineup, in the lineup, out of the lineup. Same thing with Willy Abreu. Not to the same degree because he's still more platoon-ish than Duran. But you get the point. Like everyday reps for Marcelo Meyer, he'll take his lumps, but you're always going to get the defense. You're going to get that calm demeanor, which I love as a fan of the team, makes me calm. So I think that if that is the biggest sacrifice you have to make, then great. And also, this trade almost certainly means no more Abraham Toro, which sucks because we like Abraham Toro. He's been good, but it feels a little bit like the magic is running out. And a guy like O'Hearn, an all-star in 2025, he's no doubt an upgrade. So, and it's nothing against Toro. It's just, team's got to win.
He could come off the bench, but I mean, you saw it today. Red Sox face a right-handed starter, and they chose to go Romy at first base against the righty instead of Toro. And right. You know, it's because of how he's played lately. I mean, Toro has been. I mean, he kept this team at least the first base spot afloat when we all thought no one could, no one in the organization could. Everyone was looking outside the organization. What can they do? And meanwhile, Abraham Toro for a while sustained an 800 plus OPS, and at times it was over 900. So he was that guy for a while. It hasn't been that lately, and there's not a lot of spots on this offense to upgrade right now. Like, they've got a lot of good, maybe not a lot of elite top tier guys, but they've got a lot of good. So in the starting spot, and the starting spots in this lineup, first base is it's the obvious spot to upgrade. I'll give you my pitch for why I prefer Josh Naylor over Ryan O'Hearn, and I know he's more expensive. But it goes a little bit deeper than that. I think platooning Marcelo, his at-bats against left-handed pitching haven't exactly inspired confidence in me that when a left-handed starter is out there, he's going to be the guy you want in that spot. Again, yes, you get good defense, so you could conceivably sustain it if you went that route. But Ryan O'Hearn is not, if he comes here, is not going to be a full-time player against lefty. Against righties, he's got an 877 OPS. That's great. Against lefties, it's a 608. Not as great. Josh Naylor, it's a little bit closer. It's still not perfect or anything, but it's kind of the way, Jaron Duran type stuff where it's 880 against righties, 666 against lefties. I want them to get a first baseman that you can play every day. I want an everyday first baseman. I want my platoon to be at second base. Meyer and Romy as a second base platoon would be fantastic. And every day, if Josh Naylor's in your lineup every day, you feel good. Even if it's against the lefty, you feel confident with that dude in the middle of your order. And when the lefty's on the mound, yeah, Refsnyder goes in for Massa or Willie or Duran or whatever, and Romy goes in for Marcelo, and you're still rocking 1-9. You feel good about 1-9, whether it's a righty or a lefty. So to me, I think they should go for an everyday first baseman. Even if it's a guy like Carlos Santana, he's not perfect, but he's a good defensive first baseman, hits from both sides of the plate. If they want to go cheap, I think he'd be good. He'd be a good leader, good off-the-field stuff with Carlos Santana. So I like him. I like O'Hearn too, but it doesn't exactly fit the vision that I have. But I know the Sox clearly are going to be barking up the trees for all of these different first basemen, getting the deal they see, they think is best. And the cost, I think, is going to be almost as important as the guy they're getting here.
Wouldn't you kind of have to call Naylor a platoon guy as well, though? I mean, if he has, I'll look at his career numbers, 811 versus righties, 672 against lefties. 672 is, that's way below league average. So I don't know. I honestly, I didn't know that coming into this conversation. I figured Josh Naylor, I don't have his stats off the top of my head. I figured he would have been at least a little bit better against lefties, but that's worse than I thought. And this year, what is it? 666, you said? Pretty metal.
666. Yeah. I mean, it's not great, but a lot of lefties going against left-handed pitchers, even if they're everyday guys, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, he's definitely the better player than O'Hearn. I just don't know if a higher price is worth. And then what's his defense like? Is Naylor a good? Not that it's the most. Ooh.
He's fine. Ah. He's fine.
23rd percentile this year.
It's not. What was he good. Last year? Why did I have it in my head that he was better?
I thought he was a good 64th.
Last year he was 64th.
Okay. Year before that, 88th. Ooh, because okay. He's just falling. But O'Hearn is like pretty high up. I think he's like 90th, right?
What's Santana?
93rd for O'Hearn.
Yeah, he's always been really good.
Santana's a stud.
Pat, where Gordo, are you at with first base?
I'm with you. I lean Naylor, but I think it's worth paying the price. I mean, I sure as shit will complain about Ryan O'Hearn.
No, God.
I like Naylor. I think he's more a complete hitter. 92nd percentile strikeout rate. Sox have been doing less and less of that. They can get another guy in there who does not strike out. Expecting batting average, 91st percentile. Ex-WOBA, 78th. Like, his on-base metrics and his actual, like, swing decision metrics are really good. He's not the best defensively, but I wouldn't say Abraham Toro is the best defensively either. I don't know. The more I think about it, I might be like truly 50-50.
It's close.
I think Sammy, the way he outlined O'Hearn, him and Romy, I do worry about the second base platoon because I agree. Marcelo really hasn't shown enough where I'm overly comfortable with him necessarily seeing regular bats against lefties. So I do for now want him platooned, especially in the playoffs. So O'Hearn makes that tough with Romy. But I don't know. I'm 50-50. I won't complain about either.
You could also call up Nate Eaton and send someone else down or trade someone and have him be the second baseman against lefties. Because that guy is so useful to have in an organization. A guy like Nate Eaton.
Played second base?
Yeah, I think he's played everywhere on the infield other than first base. I'm pretty sure he's played second, third, not this year, but in his career, he's played all over, which was part of the appeal. Also plays outfield. But a guy like that, who he's not great against lefties, but he's better against lefties than he is against righties. Good speed, a little bit of pop, some bad base running mistakes in his time, but that's okay. We can look past that for this conversation. He's the guy that you could just call up. You already got him.
Yeah, I don't know. I get nervous with
that's sexy.
With these guys. I mean, if he plays second base, he hasn't done it much. Certainly not this year. We haven't seen him do it at the big league level, but I also didn't think he could play much third base, and he was okay.
I thought he was a second baseman.
He was an outfielder.
Outfield and second and third is what his profile says. Let me see.
What profile?
I'll find out how much he's.
I've got outfield and third base on Baseball Reference. Let me see.
Yeah, I'm going over to Reference. Oh, no. Yeah, you're right.
He's never played it in the bigs, but I don't know about the minors.
I'm trying to find his minor league. I'll find his minor league stuff. Hold on.
I don't even know how to do that for defense on Baseball Reference. But regardless, you're gonna have to, unless you get an everyday guy, like you're gonna have to pick which is platooned first or second. And like how many guys besides like okay, so if you get Carlos Santana, he's a switch hitter, he's an everyday guy. If you get Josh Naylor, he's been an everyday guy. Like, he's going to be an everyday guy. How many other bats out there are reasonably everyday guys? Like, I see some people saying, get Eugenio Suarez and teach him first base. They're not going to do that.
No.
He'd obviously be an everyday guy, but they're not going to do that.
No, he's expensive. He's going to be – he hit his 32nd home run today. He's
35.
Really 35, yeah.
What the fuck? When did that happen?
He hit two yesterday, two today.
Oh, yeah, my crazy. God.
He's crazy. Crap.
Dude, I go away for one weekend, and I miss Suarez going off. By the way, Nate Eaton, 41 games, 350 innings at second base in the minors. So he's played it before. It's not like he's never.
How long ago were those innings?
Most recently, he played second base last year. No, this year. This year, he played one inning in Worcester. And then last year he played, he hasn't played a lot. Sorry, one game, 9 innings. And then last year he only played 2 games. The year before that he played 8. So it's sparingly he's played over there. But that's the thing. If you platoon first base and you have Meyer in there every day, you know you're getting something out of him with the defense, no matter what.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You are. And also, like, if you want to prioritize development, at some point, he's got to learn to hit lefties. So it's not the end of the world if that's where this goes. Another guy that we didn't bring up because he doesn't necessarily jump off the page as like, he's your first base ad. Nolan Arenado, who I would not want the Red Sox to get to play first base. But if you remember right, he said he would do it last offseason. And I'm sure the Cardinals would trade him. It would not be a guy that I would go after. I'd honestly would rather them continue with what they're doing than take on Nolan.
He will love Yankee Stadium. Enjoy yourself, Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, no, he's staying at St. Louis. No one's taking him now.
I think the Yankees might get so desperate that they do it.
Nah, because they're getting Suarez.
Nah, Cubs. Cubs or Mariners, steal them. They could easily beat the Yankees offer, both those teams.
I think the Cubs legitimately get him.
The Yankees are going to get someone. The Yankees are getting someone to play the infield. I don't know. Maybe Ryan McMahon. I feel like he screams Yankee. I don't know. But either way, like there's not a ton of, everyday options that are reasonably on the trade market. Like you're Marcelo Zuna, you're not teaching first base. So Nathaniel Lowe, I don't know if the Nationals are going to trade him. Josh Bell's another switch hitter, but he hasn't played the field like at all for a couple years.
Yeah.
I don't think he's playing first base. The options are limited, but the guys will get traded. You can get one of them. It's just like the question is, would you rather Pat? Okay, Pat, let me ask you this. Ryan O'Hearn or Carlos Santana?
Oh, O'Hearn.
I'm torn on it. I'm torn on it because O'Hearn's obviously better.
Dude, you have like a you basically have an all-star player at first base, both offensively and defensively, if you get O'Hearn, because then every night you're getting one of those guys against the opposite hand pitcher. It just reminds me so much of 2018. Not the same team, obviously, but just the first base position.
Here's the other thing, though. It's both ways if you want to argue for Naylor or O'Hearn. Last 28 days, Ryan O'Hearn, 723 OPS. Last 28 days, Josh Naylor, 763 OPS. So, O'Hearn was an all-star, but, a lot of those numbers are pushed into like April and May where he was really good. Let me see if I can find his by month.
But Naylor, you don't really. I don't think 23 games means much. He's been good for years.
It's true. Yeah, and here's Ryan O'Hearn by month: March and April, 920 OPS. May was a 992 OPS. June 609. July 675. Naylor. April and March 892, May 759, June 852, July 665. You're not getting a sure bet no matter what you do. Like you just got to trust yourself and trust your scouting, trust what you think you can tap into, who fits your ballpark, what you want to do defensively. If you want a platoon, like you gotta just find your guy and get him.
It's the one guarantee. If you do get O'Hearn, you are guaranteed to have good defense out of him and out of your second base position. Cause that would probably mean Marcelo every day.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing you gotta ask yourself is Marcelo ready for that? So, all right, let's get to enough said. Anyone want to go first? If no one, I can go first.
Joe, is mine ready to go? If not, someone else can go. I just found this. This Instagram account. This guy does kind of dubs sports baseball calls, and the way he does it is hilarious. You got to watch on YouTube. Yeah.
Say, Don does it. The Sox win it. They walk it off against Tampa Bay. Are you kidding me? The sound of eight straight at Fenway. Wow! This kid, he's not stopping Obi. The slider down and in. The swing is locked in. You put it in the zone. He missed the fastball earlier, but he gets the breaking ball. How did you win that game?
How did you win that game? 5-4. Say Don walks it off deep into the night. And the Red Sox can't lose.
So that guy's account, his name is Jacob with a K, Burger. Just think he's hilarious. I don't know really how he matches up his like mouth with the words because he's also speeding up his own movements. So I don't really know how he does that. He probably That's slows so down the audio too. But yeah, just a hilarious account. I was stuck on this guy's page for 2 hours the other day. Really creative. I've never seen anyone like just talk over sports announcers and make it funny. So shout out Jacob Berger. You're very funny. Appreciate the content.
Yeah, good dub. Pat, you got?
Yeah, mine's actually very topical because we hit the alarm for David Robertson signing. The Phillies are so desperate. So one thing to keep in mind about this is Jose Alvarado cannot pitch in the playoffs because he was suspended. So they have a thin bullpen that will be even thinner come playoffs. So they are pretty desperate. They gave him $5 million. That's a prorated $16 million salary for this year. That's absurd.
For a guy who hasn't basically pitched in close to a year. And
also, his velo was like not great in his pen. He was sitting, what, Gordo? 89 to 91, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does he usually? I know he's not like a huge like blow you away guy, but that's also he's like 89 to 91.
Yeah. No, he's like a 92 to 93, I think. But yeah, that just goes to show how A, desperate the Phillies are, and B, if your team's selling on a reliever at the deadline, you're going to make a pretty penny. Always do, always will.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're Gordo, his fastball velo last year, it would have been around 57th percentile. It was 94.7.
Yeah. 89.91. That's crazy. You got $5 million off of that.
Yeah. That's absurd for a 40-year-old.
Yeah. If the Sox get a reliever, they should aim higher. That's my thought. But
yeah, agreed.
My enough said, that video that went super mega viral, the Coldplay concert.
Gold.
That lady was like I worked with her for 3 months. Like she was my boss's boss at an internship I had right out of college. And yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say on brand because like that's no, she was a nice lady, but she's like, I got a text from my current boss that morning when I woke up and she said like, you're connected on LinkedIn. Do you know her? I was like, oh my fucking God. and then that was before I even knew how viral the thing went. And then the lady
her being HR is one of the funniest parts of that whole thing. The fact that there will be no meeting with HR because don't need one. Nope. There's the meeting right there.
There it is.
But that was at Gillette, right? Or Fenway.
Gillette, yeah.
Joe, pause it right there. That lady to the left, or that lady who everyone like thinks is the coworker, is not. But the lady that everyone thinks she is also worked with me at that company. I guess they followed each other for like multiple companies now. Damn. And it's funny, but also like, oh, it's kind of sad because she's like a really sweet girl and like definitely doesn't deserve to be like looped into this when she's like very much not involved. But like, it's very funny at the same time to see like these pictures of these just like people that you knew a few years ago, just like circulating the internet everywhere you look. Like, I cannot escape this. It's crazy.
You should send a completely innocuous LinkedIn message. Be like, hey, have you been?
I should text them.
Looking for work? Question mark.
Oh, yeah. Good luck to them. Good luck to everyone involved.
Moral of the story is
be faithful.
Be faithful. Don't have an affair, especially in public.
Yeah. If you're going to have an affair, doing it in front of 70,000 people, many of which could be your friends, neighbors, coworkers.
They're like, all from the same area that you live in, too.
Yeah.
So maybe it just goes to show you that if you are the CEO of a company, it doesn't mean that you're some infallible genius. Still fuck it up.
No, I think that's why everyone loves it so much, is because it's like, hey, like you're a CEO and like the head of the chief people officer, like, nah, but you guys are trash just like all of us. So
he was sacrificed. That one CEO that got shot was sacrificed. And then the year before that, the submarine CEO was sacrificed with that rinky dink submarine. So And that's why I'm not the CEO of a company. Otherwise, I totally would be. Yeah, but that right there is why I'm not. Anyway,
yeah, I agree.
Good spot to end right there.
Wait.
Very quick. This is not news.
Should I play the breaking news sound, Pat? Should I?
Yes. Yeah, do it.
No, tell me.
Daniel Bard has retired. Gordo, is it my condolences or is it a congrats? This is a post from Bradfo, one of the best humans in baseball. Daniel Bard has retired. Let us celebrate him.
It's a tough one because I love Daniel Bard, but he would still be pitching right now if he could be. So it is condolences.
He is. He's in the minor leagues with the Mariners.
Right. So he's not retiring because he wants to leave the game.
Yes.
He's retiring because he doesn't think he's going to make it back. So my condolences to Daniel Bard. There were a few of these over the weekend. Trevor Cahill retiring was one of the most insane things I've ever seen in my life.
That's extreme condolences.
Holy shit, condolences to Trevor Cahill.
You had no shot. For years, you had no shot. Anyway.
No. So shout out to Trevor Cahill. Maybe he can be the bullpen addition. If you can convince the man to come out of retirement, I'm sure you'd have to really twist his arm. Thank you guys for tuning in to episode 240 of Play Tessie. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate 5 stars. Find us on WEI's YouTube channel. Hit the thumbs up on all of our videos, which are in the Play Tessie playlist. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe Braverman, it is Gordo here. Phillies next up. Big matchup, Walker Buehler versus Zach Wheeler. Thanks for tuning in. Let's go. Peace.